Joy to you.
Hello, my name is Chuck, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Chuck.
I'd like to welcome you to the Laurel Mountains Highland Area of Narcotics Anonymous 14th Annual Unity Retreat. Yeah. We would like you to join us in celebrating the recovery and fellowship that we've come to know, need, and deserve in our lives. We encourage you to share in our NA Unity through your experience, strength, and hope in a wide variety of workshops. This is an open retreat. All are welcome to attend. However, we ask that only addicts share in the workshops. In accordance with our seventh tradition, we are fully self-supporting. I'd like to thank you for registering. We should remember that our actions this weekend are a direct reflection on Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. Let's carry the NA message, not the mess. What is the NA message? Our message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, because that's all we have to give. That no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction. Basic text, page 65. The NA way. In Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma. When NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross addicts, or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that one drug is separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities, not our differences. Through the press, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. If any members of the press are present, please come to registration table, where you will be referred to our public information chairperson. We respectfully ask that no pictures be taken during the unit retreat by the press. If any NA members are approached by the press, please refer them to the registration table. Remember, no one person represents NA. Please do not attempt to represent NA to the press alone. Thank you. Also remember, there's no smoking in the buildings and the boys' room. Okay. Hello, everyone. I'm an addict named Chuck.
Okay.
I'd like to welcome you to this workshop entitled Step 1, Honest, and Tradition 1, Unity. Could you please help me open this? help me open this meeting with a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Could we please have the reading of We Do Recover? Debbie. Okay, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Melvin, from the More Be Revealed group of NA in the Laurel Mountains, Thailand. Welcome,
morning, everybody. Great day for recovery, and a beautiful morning to remember it by. I'm an addict. My name is Mel. We're powerless over our addiction. Our lives become unmanageable. It's all about getting honest today. And I've done a lot of that in the last 22 months or so. I was never honest for a lot of years. And it all starts with accepting, and admitting we are addicts. And, I had a little problem with that. But I always knew I was one. After all them years in my addiction. But the thing was the roughest part was admitting I was powerless over drugs. And as the first step says, we are powerless over our addictions. And and drugs for me, you know, it's all about addictions. And my drugs, when I was high, I did, you know, some crazy things. And mainly the worst one, I think, for me was gambling. You know, when I was high, I gambled like crazy. Come this January, it's going to be 27 years since I put down my drug of choice, and that was alcohol. But I spent a lot of time in a bar. I thought I could hide in there because the poker machines were back in the back of the bar, hid because they were against the law to have them. You know, so they had us in a corner where it was dark. You know, I could do my drug of choice then. It was cocaine, and I could put it right on a poker machine and just blow my brains out while I was gambling. It was no big deal for me to blow $500 or $1,000 a night in there. Even if I won $500, I still played because I could sit there. I felt comfortable in the bar, playing the machine. And, you know, the only way I was leaving is if I didn't have any money in my pocket, because I'm all hyped up on drugs. And the last thing I want to do is get out there on the road, for one thing, and take the chance of being pulled over by the cops. So I'd just sit there. And usually it was the girls that were running the bar had to say, all right, Mel, you got to go. And this was a lot of time in my later addiction that I spent playing them poker machines. And normally I would just, a lot of times I didn't even have to leave it to. I would give the girl that was bartending, you know, some coke, and she was happy to sit there with me. You know, sometimes it led to, like I said, that drug in my gambling addiction led me to, and I didn't like to give up my drugs to a girl for sex, you know, but sometimes that bartender wanted it, and wanted the coke, and she would give herself up just for that, and, but not me. You ain't giving my cocaine, and because I had that bad experience when I was young with women, and I lost trust in them, and I didn't trust women, so I would never give up my drug of choice for a piece of ass, you know. It just wasn't worth it. And it's sorry to say that, you know, when I was high, I didn't trust women because of my experience. But, you know, when I got clean, I realized that, you know, I was wrong all them years. Women are, they're good. They're beautiful. I love women. You know, God, he worked time and a half when he made women. And I screwed my life up not trusting women because of my addiction. And the gambling just wasn't playing poker machines, it was playing lottery tickets. I still do play lottery tickets, not near as bad, but I would, you know, it was no big deal to walk in a store and spend $300 because it was drug money anyway, you know, it didn't matter. Like I said, even if I won $300, I'd just stay there and play some more. And so I knew I was powerless over everything that drugs did to me. And also spending money. You know, I would spend money, I would buy things that I wanted, not that I needed. And like I said, I had a job. My life wasn't unmanageable. At least I didn't think so for a lot of years, you know, because I was doing mainly marijuana and alcohol. But I had a lot of bad experience with that. You know, we all do. Many times, not knowing how I got home. Being so drunk and on drugs. And one time I can remember pulling into my driveway and going in and passing out of my house. But the thing was, I left three guys in my car. Had no idea they were even there, you know. And to get home is amazing sometimes how we can kill people or kill ourselves. Today, the laws are a lot stricter. Back then, when I grew up, you could drink and drug all you want. The cops didn't care. You know, if they pulled you over, they slap you on your wrist, dump out your marijuana, scrub it in the ground or whatever, you know. You know, like I said, the addiction was all drug-related. And we have many addictions. And for me, you know, when I finally, you know, after all these years of screwing up and later in my life, I realized that my life was so unmanageable because all I thought about when I put my head on a pillow was where I was going to get my next fix for the next day. I didn't say my prayers. I didn't think about working, which later on I wasn't working. I'd sell drugs. You know, it was a lot easier that way. In my addiction also, I finally realized that later on in my life when I was doing coke and marijuana every day, like I said, I had quit drinking when I was 24. And that's almost 27 years ago. And you know, the powerlessness and unmanageability really hit me. I never was arrested until a couple years ago. So I lived a pretty, you know, I mean, I was breaking the law, but never got arrested. My life really come unmanageable in 2003 when I was, tell you the truth, it started, I mean, it was unmanageable, but it really got bad when my dog passed away, when it got sick. And I had to take care of it for months. And I couldn't sleep at night because I'd always thought, well, that's the night he's going to go, you know. So I spent a lot of nights up, and it was drugging. I mean, just more drug after more drug. And I moved into the dope man's house, you know, and I was doing work. I was doing construction work. So I moved into his house after my dog passed away, and it was just drugs every day, all day. I can remember in a three-month period of time, I lost 65 pounds. I didn't realize I looked like the Walking Dead. Even though I looked in the mirror every day, I didn't realize it until my niece. I went home for Easter one day and went to give her a hug, and she went screaming and yelling and says, "There's some guy trying to hug me." And that's when I went and looked in the mirror and actually took a real look at myself. And it was all because of drugs, you know. I looked like hell. And, of course, I put the weight on back on, but it took me a long time to put it back on. And that's when I realized my life was so unmanageable. It was crazy. Finally, I moved back home with my parents. I'm single. I never married, no kids. So I always got that choice to move back home. I have the greatest parents in the world. And they put up with my bullshit for a long time. And so I moved back home, and I actually stayed clean for a while. But then, you know, I heard another dope dealer needed some work done, and that's just my excuse of moving right in. You know, I can get in there and do that construction work. And so I did that, and I was doing work for him, and the next thing you know, I really wasn't buying a lot of drugs. He was just giving it to me. He was a big-time dope dealer, and he was giving it to me every day. I didn't even have to ask. He was just giving it to me. And you know, no, I'm not talking about a little bit. He'd give me enough to last me a week, you know, and I'm talking coke. And so my life, I can remember one winter just a few years ago, I spent the whole winter in my bedroom. And I would come out only to go to the bathroom. Very seldom did I eat. I can remember it was like 12, 13 days. I didn't even go to the bathroom because I didn't eat. So you don't eat, you don't go. It's that simple. And that's crazy. You think you got to go, but you don't. You just sit there and nothing, you know, and it's all because of unmanageability of my addiction. And, you know, I always wanted. Always, not really that I wanted, because I wanted that drug task force to come and get me, you know, so I could finally get help that I didn't know where to get. I didn't know nothing about Narcotics Anonymous and the steps. The only steps I knew about was the five or six I had to climb into the dope man's house. You know, those are the steps that I used. And finally, you know, before I got arrested, it was really bad. Every night I can remember saying to myself, this is going to be the night that I die. Because I was in so much pain. My head hurt so bad that I would sleep on a heating pad on my head and wake up in pain, so I'd go to the ice bag. And then when the ice bag didn't work, I snorted more lines because it took away the pain. And It's how bad it was at one point. And I could, you know, every night I would say, this is the night I'm dying. I didn't want to die. But I knew if I did, that I would feel better. You know, and so finally, after waiting for that knock on the door, which I never got, I was woken up in the morning one time, somebody beating on the door, and I said, who the hell's beating on the door? I get up and look, there's drug task force guys all around my house. You know, I finally got, God finally sent him to me. And it was my higher power that done that. I went to jail for the first time at 48 years old. You know, I've been clean ever since, but it's, and you hate to say it, at that time I hated them guys for, you know, because of the way they treated me for one thing. I mean, they treated me all right, but I'm a little country guy, you know, live out in the country. I'm not in the city like Pittsburgh or Baltimore or all these big cities, Philadelphia, where they deal with crazy drug dealers every day with guns and stuff like that. You know, when I come out on the porch, they pointed their guns at me and says, you move, motherfucker, I'm going to blow your brains out. You know, and I'm saying, wow. Never expected that in a million years, you know. And so I go to jail. I'm scared. I do what I'm supposed to. I get out. They court ordered me to go to two meetings a week. Well, I went to one NA meeting and one to the other fellowship. Faithfully. I did that for probably 6 months. But before I was arrested and clean, you know, you have your bad days. And after I got clean, I says, well, you know, them bad days, them powerless days, them unmanageability days is like being kicked in the nuts. You know, that's the pain you feel every time that happens. Is if you're a guy, you've felt that many times because it happens, you know, just from playing sports or some asshole just coming around and whatever, in a fight or whatever. And, you know, that pain is in your stomach and in your eyes water and you're laying on the ground motionless. That is a very strong pain. And I felt that a few times. But I thought once I got clean that wouldn't be the problem. But about 6 months in, I was devastated by a relationship that I had, it hurt me a good bit. And I didn't have a sponsor, and I didn't have much of a we. I didn't know nothing about working steps because I didn't want to do it. Like I said, I got clean on alcohol by myself, and I thought I could do it with drugs too. But when I was devastated, I didn't really think about using, but you know, it wasn't probably far from that. And I go to a meeting one night, a speaker meeting, and I hear a guy speak. And before the night was over, I had a sponsor. A lot of things that he said reminded me of myself, and it actually started clicking. You know, maybe I do need a sponsor. Maybe I do need to start working these steps. And so I did that. Shortly after getting my sponsor, and a couple weeks later, start working in steps. I was going to 10 meetings a week, and I did that for well over a year. I had over 500 meetings in that next year, and meeting makers make it. Believe me, you do stay clean if you work it. I work them steps. I love working, doing step work. The first three went pretty fast. I did them. The last one, the number four. I mean, I'm done with it. I ain't finished working it yet. But you know, you're gonna have them bad days in your life, and you got to prepare yourself for it. So I was told to start building a foundation, and that was to get that sponsor and work the steps and get a wee. Go to meetings. So I did that, like I said, and in my foundation, I've built a pretty strong one, I think. I mean, I've been, like I said, to the meetings and the steps. But I've been to conventions. I've been to retreats, speaker jams. It seems like I don't have any time at all for my regular life. But you know what? These last couple of years, I've had four surgeries on my wrists. And I haven't been able to work, so I spent this whole last 22 months on my recovery. And I've built that strong foundation. And, you know, every time that I was supposed to go to court, it was canceled or continued. And I've, you know, I struggled with it many a times. And I always had to call my sponsor because there ain't no way I was just so out of it. But, you know, after 22 months of that happening, I finally realized, you know, what I learned, and I've applied what I've learned in my life. I've learned, you know what, I'm ready for this. Next Friday, I will finally get sentenced after over 22 months. But you know what, I've applied everything in my life that I've learned. I'm ready for it. It's not going to bring me down. Whatever happens, happens. But early on, I couldn't handle it. There's no way I was going back to jail. I mean, believe it or not, us addicts, we are crazy people out there using. But in that jail, I've never met so many crazy people in my life. And I was a good person, actually, but I wanted to kill everybody before I got out of there. You know, I couldn't take it. I don't want to go back, but you know what? I will. If that's what happens, if that's what they decide, I'll go. And I was facing a lot of time. Right now, I'm not. It's all because of, you know, I had to put up with my lawyer. You know, I couldn't afford one, even though I had so much money in my addiction. I figured, why am I going to spend money on a lawyer when they're going to give me a free one? Well, right on. I mean, I never seen him for the first 18 months. I mean, what kind of lawyer is that? But you know what? It turned out half decent. He actually did. When it came down to getting that jury trial and fighting for me, he didn't sleep for 3 or 4 days to that time that we went into court. He busted his butt. I met with him, and we had a pretty good case. But that day, we made a deal. Because they didn't want to spend all that, the judge didn't want to spend all that money picking a jury. And I mean, we got 75 people around sitting to pick a jury. And we made a deal finally. And the judge himself made the case, made my case for me. He finally told the attorney general's lawyer to throw out all them charges that they had no evidence on and give him a lenient one because he might accept that. I gave them a deal, but for them to accept the deal I gave them, I had to accept one of their charges. And after 18 months of messing around, they dropped it from a cocaine charge to a marijuana charge that carries 0 to 1 month. And I asked that lawyer 100 times to drop the charges. He wouldn't do it. The judge asked him one time, and he said, okay, just like that. I mean, it was instant, okay. You know, so I'm doing all right. I'm looking pretty good. I'm building that foundation. And now that I got that strong foundation, I've got some really good walls. And I've got my predecessors in there helping me out in the one room. I got Jimmy K, Randy C, which is no longer with us today. But I've never met these guys, but I've got their CDs, and I listen to them all the time. You know, and I got, you know, I got Edgar, and I got Rich, and I got Chuck. You know, these guys were there before me to let me know what's going on. I got my sponsorship room with my sponsor and all my family. I got Dave, I got Don, I got Jason. You know, I got these guys for when I have them bad days. And unimaginability comes pouring in. I can go to them. I got my Wii. I got my Chucks. I got my three Mikes. Michael B's, you know, three of them. You know, I got them people. I got my literature room with all my step work, all my books. I got my CD room, my main man Chuck, who's helped me out many a times. I've got my newcomer room because I got to remember, you know, where I've been and where I come from. And I can't relax. I can't get comfortable in my own shoes because that's going to lead me back out. So I work a pretty good recovery. And you know, when that unmanageability and that powerlessness comes knocking at the door, I always think of him as the devil, you know, because he's ready to kick me right between the legs again and bring me down. And I'm ready for it. Like I said, I got my foundation. So he comes knocking. And today, you know, when I was 6 months and he come knocking, I figured I was clean. When he kicked me, man, it hurt. Now, I got all my people, all my little soldiers, all my tools to help me in my foundation. And but you got to remember, there's no sergeants, no lieutenants, no corporals, no private. We're all equal. We're all the same. Nobody's better or lesser. So when that door comes knocking, I got Fran O answering the door. You know, she lets him in. I don't know, Fran, you know, she's a good person. Never met her, but I've heard her many times. And I don't know if she would like me having her as a door person. You know, she might want to kick me right there between the legs. Who knows? But that's about the size of it. Like I said, nobody better or lesser. And, you know, she opens that door and he comes flying in. The devil comes flying in. He's ready to kick me. And there's Jimmy K to protect me right there. You know, there's my sponsorship. There's my literature. There's the newcomer. Everybody's right there to protect me. And it's because I built that foundation. And you know what? That time I can grab the devil. And I could take him outside of my foundation and throw him back in that hole that we've been in all our lives. You know, and give him a good kick before I put him in there. And, you know, and let him know that alcohol is a drug. You know, because, you know, with that other fellowship, without that other, thank God for that other fellowship, because we wouldn't have our fellowship today. But as I was going to these split meetings, you know, NA and the other fellowship, after a while I start getting that blurred message. And I'm not cutting that fellowship down. I'm just saying, for me, the only way is the NA way. And I did what I'm supposed to try to make my life manageable. I have, like I said, the greatest parents, greatest family. I have all that trust today. And when it comes to being, you know, honest, open-minded, and willing, and having faith in my sponsor to tell him everything that I can and be honest. You know, if you can't be honest with your sponsor, who can you be honest with? That's nobody. You know what, I have a great life today. Like I said, I'm looking for some sentencing next week, and I'm prepared for it. I hope everybody has a good weekend. It's an honor to speak anytime. And I love everybody in this fellowship. I'll do anything for anybody. That's all I got. Thanks.
Our next speaker on Tradition One, which is Unity, is Marcel from It's About Change, home group of the Beaver Valley. There you go.
Good morning, everybody. Hey, I'm Marcel. I'm an addict. First off, I didn't want to do this. You know, I kind of got asked, and then I wanted to back out of this, okay? Because let me preface by saying I'm not an NA guru. I'm not an NA police. So, and the traditions, I mean, a lot of times back in, I know, our area, there are people that know the traditions inside and out. I'm not one of those guys. I'm your average NA person who doesn't know the traditions really well, except when I violate them, and somebody says, "Hey, you're violating your tradition." I go, "Oh, sorry." And you're getting a layman's view on this. I called my sponsor. I tried to get him to sign off on me backing out of this. I said, "I'm not qualified to talk about this." And, you know, of course, he wouldn't sign off on it. And then even the gentleman who asked me to speak, I I was meant to do this because I tried to find a number, couldn't find it. So obviously I'm here for a reason, you know, and I never really looked at the traditions a great deal because I've always felt, you know, the steps are for us, the traditions are more or less for the groups and, you know, kind of to keep our organization running smoothly, keep us from killing one another, more or less. And so this has been an eye-opening experience. I've learned a lot from it. Tradition one is our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. The way I'm going to approach this is I'll talk about, like, you know, in bits and pieces. With the our common welfare should come first, and you know, what I thought is, what is common welfare exactly? And what it is it's looking at, it's the greater good of the group, okay? And one of the things that Tradition 1's asking us is to look outside our, you know, look at the big picture. Look out of our little worlds. And I'm good at looking and focusing on me. That's one of my strong points. So this is why I said, this is obviously my higher power. Put this in front of me for a reason, because I learned a great deal. It's to look at the bigger picture and kind of put my wants and needs aside and, you know, concentrate on what's on the best for the program and NA in general. The interesting thing is, you know, like I mentioned before, I thought traditions were, like, to govern how groups behaved and so forth. You know, from having to, like, kind of, you know, take a real look at this and do some reading, I mean, I got a lot of stuff out of this personally. So I learned that, too, that the traditions aren't just for area service. That's what I thought. You know, more or less. And I always tease that I was one of those guys in the back of the room, and somebody would bring up the other fellowship, and I'd turn to my friend and go, tradition violation. I don't know if it was, but I always said that, you know. That's what I thought of tradition. But the second part of this is about the personal recovery depends on NA unity. Basically, that part of it is that we don't recover by ourselves. I forget that sometimes. I'm kind of a loner. I kind of stay by myself a great deal. I have a very small we. And, you know, from reading this, it really opened my eyes to the idea that we don't recover by ourselves. And the greater the we, the better for our recovery in general. because I tend to be, and I would say addicts in general tend to be, self-destructive independently. I know I've screwed up my life many a time without using drugs. I don't know about you, but I've made some really bad decisions, and I wasn't high. And that was a real eye-opener to me, because I always thought it was the drugs' fault. You know, if I wasn't doing drugs, I wouldn't have screwed my life up so much. Through experience, I found out that that's far from the case. Left to my own, thoughts and decisions, a lot of times I'll screw my life up. I've been fired from, like, three jobs. Not for getting high, just for being me, you know. But what I was saying is that, you know, independently we tend to be self-destructive. We gather strength from one another, interacting with one another. You know, and I often wonder why I struggle with stuff, and that's probably the reason, because I don't have enough people I deal with, and that's the one thing I took out of this. When they talk about NA unity, basically the stronger we are as a group, the better the recovery is, because it's kind of the idea of we versus I. And I think the tradition, one of the main concepts of it, is that if, you know, it starts at a small level with the individual, myself. I'll use myself as an example. I need to, you know, put my personal beliefs and wants aside and go with, like, for instance, my home group. We have group consciences. I don't always agree with a lot of things that are discussed, but nice. I, you know, of course, voice my opinion, and you know. But when it comes down to it, I kind of, you know, back off to the home group or give the, you know, we vote on it, and it basically goes from there. And then it moves on up the line from the home group where the GSR goes to area and basically acts as the representative and, the, you know, basically expresses the opinion of the home group. But when it comes down to it, whatever's decided on the area level, we as a group have to kind of accept and put our personal views aside, kind of have some faith in the process, okay? And it's from area up to region and region to world. And this is the one thing I realized from reading about this tradition is this is one of the principles before personalities. Another concept I struggle with. You know, just because, you know, I don't like you, I'm allowed to not like you. I, you know, I just should listen to you and be open-minded enough to take in what you say and realize that it might be true, it might be better than what I'm currently thinking or how I'm doing something. And I struggle with that myself. But that's one of the ideas of the tradition, too, is to, you know, be open-minded. Diversity in our program is not a bad thing. It's one of our strengths. It, you know, there's a big difference between unity and uniformity. the idea is not for us all to think the same and act the same. You know, I think over, you know, the different aspects that everybody brings. That's why, you know, it's kind of one of those, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, when he said we're all the same, we're not all the same. We have a common purpose to be here. We're very different. You know, we have different thoughts, different views. But that's not a bad thing. The one thing we do have in common is we're all trying to get a day clean. And that's what, you know, we need to focus on in general. excuse me. I'm a little nervous up here. The other thing is this is the first time I spoke at what do you call it, convention or retreat, and they said amphitheater. And I'm thinking, and I got up here, I'm like, thank God. And then it's early in the morning, I'm like, thank God, it's 9. Nobody's going to be here. As cold as it was, I'm sure if you slept outside, you didn't sleep very well. But the other thing about, from you know, doing a little reading on this tradition, one of the things it's important for us to keep in mind is that, you know, today's decisions can affect tomorrow's, you know, can affect tomorrow. Basically, you know, people coming in, we can't just think about, you know, what's going on now. We have to look at the larger picture and think of how it's going to affect future members and so forth. I mean, the other thing is, you know, about unity is that it's about not just working together. It's about playing together and doing stuff like this, the retreat, the conventions, and so forth. Because, you know, that one, we get to practice social skills that I don't know about you guys, but I was never too good at. And, you know, unless I was intoxicated or, you know, under some influence. And, I mean, getting out here and interacting together is, it builds unity between us. I think the main thing that I really got out of this first tradition is that, you know, together we're very strong. And the stronger I mean, the more together we are, the stronger we are, and the better it is for each individual member of NA. Our disease wants us to, like, divide and conquer. It wants us to look at our differences, to look at, I don't like that person. You know, that person's an asshole. So I'm not going to listen to him. You know, and that's one of the things. I read this, I'm thinking, man, I'm more screwed up than I thought. You know, which was a good thing, because I don't, you know, I've been clean for a number of days now, wow, and a lot of times I get caught up in my own little world. I call it Marcel's world, and it's just where I am king, you know, and I like my little world because I can control everything, and I just don't see the big picture. And, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing that the first tradition is talking about, is looking at the big picture, looking at, you know, thinking about our common goal, you know, and which is to stay clean, like I mentioned, and, you know, just working together to improve the this organization in general, I mean, and kind of having some faith in the process and how it's set up, because obviously it's worked because it's been around for so long. Now, this the one thing I want to say about this, I've spoke before, and this is a lot harder, this, but talking about tradition, and people were, you know, somebody asked me, and that's why I got to look at some notes, because, like I said, I can talk about me. If I was up here doing a lead, it wouldn't be that difficult. Talking about we is much harder for me. I focus on me constantly. And the other thing is about this, and this is why I've mentioned about the tradition, is I've been to area service. And then, like, I went once and I said, there's a bunch of crazy people in there, and then I left, you know, because I was like, wow, they like to argue about all kinds of things, you know, and so I've never really, that's why I said this is a whole brand new, you know, I mean, this, me looking at this particular tradition has been a real eye-opener, and like I said, even if I'm, what I learned is even if I'm not involved with ARIS service, or, you know, a GSR, or, you know, this tradition can be very beneficial in my life. It kind of makes me take a look at, you know, things outside my own little world. I hope most of that made sense, I hope. I know what I was trying to say, I just don't know if it came out properly. I appreciate your time, and have fun this week.
I would like to thank the speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. Could we please have the reading of Just for Today? Yeah, why not?
Steve, I'm an addict. Hey. Hi, family. Just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. And just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Thanks, Steve. Okay, we have a nice way of closing. Let's form a circle and close with a wee version of Serenity Prayer.
It's a good job, Jonathan. Hi, boy, I guess we're excited this time. It's my band's holding
me. Good thing I'm over here,
we got plenty of room.
The first came to me in the
Thing in the middle?
This week we shared a